Today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podco.co at podgo.co. Now let's kick off the show. John and James, let's get at it. This is the Outlap F1 Podcast, featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 27 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. This is the Austrian Grand Prix Race Review Part 2, I guess we'll call it. I am your host, James, along with my wonderful co-host, Andy and Deanna. John is out tonight with some family stuff, but we have a very special guest with us this evening. We have Adam from the DNF1 Podcast. Adam, thank you for joining us. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about your
Thanks, James, and thanks, everyone, for having me on. So, as James mentioned, guys, my name is Adam. I'm from the DNF1 podcast. We're a podcast based in the UK across the pond. And like you guys at Outlap F1, we basically discuss all the hot talking points in Formula One and obviously give our previews and reviews for every single Grand Prix throughout the season.
Very good. And kind of pretty good timing. We pushed this back a day. Normally we do this on Sunday nights, but we decided Americans and Brits together on July 4th doesn't really make much sense.
I forgive you guys. Don't worry. Nothing personal.
not to mention the war zone that was going on outside of my apartment last night. I put a video up about it, and just a preview of, you know, had we tried to actually record, I don't think it would have sounded all that great. So we're doing everybody a favor.
Yeah, it didn't stop here for about 4 hours straight from every single angle. So,
yeah.
Oh, I couldn't imagine anything more annoying.
Yeah. Yep, good old American holiday, blowing up Chinese fireworks. That's how we do it here in the States. All right. So quick reminder, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, and Reddit at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can check out our link tree on Twitter, of course. You can email the show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. Our wonderful website is at www.outlapf1.com. You can find some old episodes, including the F1 for Beginners episode from Season 3 all the way back on Episode 6, to kind of hear a little bit more about how the sport actually works. We've got a lot of new fans coming in every week, mostly thanks to Drive to Survive. So make sure you check that out if you're a newer fan. You can also look at our About Us page on our website, where you can also find interviews with Sabre Cook. That was Season 2, Episode 2, and Season 3, Episode 21. Make sure you check those out. And, of course, we have Deanna and her Relapped YouTube channel, which is getting lots and lots of views lately. So that's blowing up. We're real happy for Deanna, so keep that going. Make sure you support her there. And you can support our show via Anchor. There will be a link in the show notes where you can do a monthly donation, $1, $5, whatever you want. Everything you send in will go straight to the show to make things better, which you will start noticing with our new Riverside recording platform, which is working out pretty good. It's nice to see everybody. And of course, you can check out Manscaped by using code OUTLAP, that's OUTLAP, all one word, to get yourself 20% off and free shipping. So now that's all out of the way. We can move right into our headlines of the day. Something tells me they're going to be pretty similar across the board, but we'll see for sure. Andy, why don't you start us off with that?
I hate when we have to do these types of episodes because everyone wants to hear me rage about it, but I'm going to try to stay calm for most of today. But it's the race where I'm honestly struggling to figure out how the FIA actually wants race car drivers to race each other, because apparently defending is just a lost art and we don't respect or like it anymore. So that's my headline.
All right. That's about where I thought it was going to be from you. So for mine, I actually saw somebody made the meme, GIF, whatever, where Oprah's kind of giving out all the free cars. But this race was basically, you get a penalty, you get a penalty, you get a penalty. Everybody got a penalty. So that pretty much summed up the whole race for me. Deanna, what do you got?
Thing. Just penalties, penalties, and more penalties. There was a total of 10 in the race, much of which I'm sure we're about to talk about. So, yeah, so excited. My favorite topic.
Hindsight's 2020, of course, but I guess that would have been a pretty good prop bet for us. Would have been how many penalties in the race? I think we would have been
many investigations you had. Basically, three quarters of the field got investigated yesterday.
For sure. Adam, you want to take a crack at your headline of the day?
Oh, wow. Well, it's just along the similar lines, but amidst all the penalties that were being awarded, Max Verstappen won the Grand Prix, for those of you that weren't paying attention to that part. Apparently so, you know, an hour and a half later, Max crossed the line. He didn't do a burnout, as far as I'm aware, because I think, well, there would have been a queue outside the steward's office if he had done. So,
Penalty 11.
Yeah, probably Max's most boring victory of his career, I'd say, because he really didn't even see him much on the broadcast, besides maybe one pit stop there at the end. But now, Andy, I'm going to throw it to you so you can recap qualifying for us.
So in what was yet again another dry qualifying session, we did not have any rain this weekend, at least other than a little spritz in practice two. Going out in P20 was Nikita Mazepin, P19 was Mick Schumacher, P18 was Nicholas Latifi, P17 down in Q3, in Q1 yet again, Esteban Ocon, and P16 was Kimi Raikkonen. Advancing into Q2, but going no further, in P15 was Antonio Giovinazzi. In P14, we had a very angry Fernando Alonso, complete with air punches, and some nice swearing on the radio, by the way. Very nicely done. P13 was Daniel Ricciardo, yet again, not advancing any farther than that in qualifying. P12, Charles Leclerc. P11, Carlos Sainz. In P10, going into Q3, from 10 to 1, in P10 was Lance Stroll. In P9, notice who I have not said yet, Mr. Saturday with the delivery, George Russell, his first Q3 appearance for Williams and Williams's first Q3 appearance since the 2018 Italian GP. In P8 was Sebastian Vettel. However, he was given a three-place penalty for impeding the very angry Fernando Alonso. In P7 was Yuki Tsunoda, P6, Pierre Gasly, P5, Valtteri Bottas, P4, Lewis Hamilton, P3, Sergio Perez, P2, Lando Norris, career best qualifying, McLaren's first front row quali since Button and Hamilton did it in the 2012 Brazilian GP, and in P1 with a lap time of 103.720, Max Verstappen.
All right, very good. Thank you, Andy. Maybe a couple talking points from qualifying. I guess that Vettel deal was a sign of things to come as far as penalties go. Kind of tough penalty for Vettel to take there. Normally I would be bashing Vettel, but I feel like he kind of got screwed by the guys in front of him queuing up there. And then his team probably could have done a better job of letting him know Alonso was coming on a burner there. I think George Russell, I mean, who's the story there, Andy, for you, George Russell or Lando Norris?
I think both of them at the same time. Lando, that came out of nowhere for me. I mean, you look at the practice times, FP1, I think he was 10th, FP2, right around the same time. FP3, he could not get a clean lap in, and I don't think he even set a competitive time. And then all of a sudden, you know, I expected maybe 4th, 5th would be a really good day. I was not expecting P2. I certainly was not expecting him to be trading mini sectors back and forth with Verstappen on the last lap there. To the point where I was almost like, he might actually pull this off. And then I saw 0.048 short. And I think I woke up my neighbors with an obscenity. but it was fun to have that.
Pretty damn close, yeah. Adam, so as the resident Brit on the podcast today, who's got more juice with the British fans right now? Lando Norris or George Russell? Like, who do you guys think is going to be the next, like, big name British racer once Lewis Hamilton's finally gone?
Well, it's so hard to tell, James. And, you know, beforehand, I think George Russell had a lot of credit going his way. Obviously, very successful in the F2 Championship first time out when Lando and George were racing together through that season. George was just phenomenal. But obviously, their F1 careers have taken completely different paths. And I would have said up until the start of this season, I would have said absolutely George Russell. The moment he eventually gets in that Mercedes seat, which hopefully will be sooner rather than later, he will be able to have the opportunity to step up and perhaps learn from Lewis whilst Lewis is still going to be around for a few more years and then eventually take over that mantle and be Mercedes lead driver. But Lando Norris, I have to say, this season has been an absolute revelation. And I said often on my podcast before the season started. I think this is a big year for Lando. We've seen a lot of promise, a lot of potential in his drive and a lot of speed, but it just hasn't all come together perhaps in the way that perhaps Carlos Sainz had done in McLaren before he moved to Ferrari. And there was always the expectation that we needed Lando to make that extra step up this season with a teammate as illustrious as Daniel Ricciardo. He hasn't just done that by a small margin. He has completely taken that ball and run with it into new territory. And we're seeing a point now where perhaps we should be talking about Lando in that equation for the new generation with Verstappen, Leclerc, Sainz, George Russell as well. So at this point, Lando is doing a fantastic job. I still think George, hopefully he will get that promotion soon and we'll get to see what George can really do like we did in Sakhir last season. But right now, you know, British fans have a lot to be excited about post Lewis Hamilton, that I can say.
Yeah, it must be nice to be able to watch some of your countrymen out there on track. not a feeling we're used to here in the States, unfortunately. Deanna, not to go too far off on a tangent before we get into the race here, but judging by some of your tweets, I think I know where you're going to go with this, but if you had to pick a driver of the year right now, you going Lando or Max?
I'm going Lando. I think Max, while very impressive what he's doing, and I think it's a very, very close second, Lando doing what he's doing, I think the progress from last year to this year and in the midfield, kind of constantly having those battles, and then this weekend alone being on pace with Mercedes, even if it was Bottas, like, it's insanely impressive throughout the entire race. So he's definitely my driver of the season. But while we're on the topic of qualifying, if I can just kick off the complaining about the stewarding. So while Vettel was given the penalty for impeding Alonso, Bottas and Sainz were also called to the stewards, but they were not given a penalty, basically because, well, the steward said this, the stewards determined that too many drivers contributed to the situation and therefore the driver concerned is not fully to blame. So just nobody gets a penalty because they all messed up, apparently, except for Vettel, who was just happened to be in the back of the pack. Which is just a questionable decision, I think, overall, because it was in the events notes. They were going slowly. I think that is a violation of said rule. And we're just going, oh, well, everybody did it, so it's fine.
No, I mean, these three stewards, I'm just going to skip to the end here and just say these three should never do this again. I don't know, you know, if they have experience. I assume, you know, that these guys have had experience doing this before, but this entire weekend, I mean, they set a rule that says, okay, if you're in turn 9 and 10, you can't queue up. And then, so everybody just queued up right before that. And you had the exact same situation happen again. And, you know, here comes flying Alonso. And there was literally nowhere for Vettel to go. There was nowhere for everybody to go. I'm listening to Norris's radio earlier on in that qualifying session. And he's like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. Everybody was saying the same thing on the radio back to their engineers. And nobody had a solution for it. So, I mean, yeah, you want to pick on Vettel because he's the obvious one to give a penalty to, fine, but it's everybody. It's that whole situation. You should some sort of better edict had to have come out before, other than no queuing up in 9 and 10.
And my last thing on qualifying is I just want to say Russell went faster on mediums than the Ferraris and made it to Q3. So
I was waiting for something like that. While I was watching it, I was honestly in the camp of wouldn't have minded them landing in 11th and 12th to get their tire selection. I was really worried they're going to come out on softs just to make it into Q3, and that would have not been the right decision.
Yeah, they made the
that actually turned out to be the best strategy call.
That
turned out to be an actually very smart call to come out on the mediums, even though they didn't make it.
And that's not something you normally say about Ferrari and strategy. So it's a good sign. Mattia had probably nothing to do with that decision.
Lauren Menkes, I'm telling you, I like what I see in that dude. He's getting stuff right. The more calls he makes, the better they look.
Well, and I'm blanking on his name now. It's like the 26-year-old team strategist now. I'm going to have to look up his name, but so far, so good. Only been a few races, but I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, as usual. but let's go ahead and get into the race. First up, we talk backmarkers. That would be Esteban Ocon, Nikita Mazepin, Mick Schumacher, back where he belongs, Sebastian Vettel, Nicholas Latifi, and Kimi Raikkonen. Oh, and actually Antonio Giovinazzi and Lance Stroll. So as far as the backmarkers go, Esteban Ocon, I mean, is it time? Is he ever going to come back to Austria?
I don't think so anytime soon. I think the best part of his weekend was it ended. 2.5 corners, got in the middle of a Schumacher and Giovinazzi sandwich. And talk about just an unlucky way of getting contact. I mean, you know, you've seen guys, you know, go into people's barge boards before and they bounce off their fine. You see, you know, front wings sometimes go into the right part of the tire and the tire survives. Just broke the suspension. Nothing else he could do. Day done.
Yeah, very quick day for Ocon. Adam, so this is something I usually challenge Andy with, but I'll give it to you this week. You have to say one nice thing about Haas's weekend. Go.
Both cars finished.
It's about what I've said most of this year.
That is pretty much the only nice thing you could say. So Sebastian Vettel, DNF, thanks to Kimi Raikkonen there at the end. He did have that three-place grid penalty from qualifying, and then him and Raikkonen collided on that final lap. But did classify ahead of the Haas car, so he got 17th there. But the most important thing in my eyes is he got 0 points. So I can pad that lead I have with Charles Leclerc bet that I got going with John. Nicholas Latifi, anybody got anything to say about his 16th place finish?
If we want to bring up another stewarding something or other. So Raikkonen got the penalty for causing a collision. That was a 20 second penalty and 2 penalty points. Then Latifi and Mazepin both got penalties for speeding through double weighted yellows, which received a 30 second penalty and 3 penalty points. I don't understand the reasoning behind the actual accident itself, which was probably the most dangerous situation of all of them, getting less of a penalty than the speeding incident. Although in self, don't do it, still should be penalized. I don't understand why that's more of a penalty than the actual collision itself. Anyway.
And then allowed Raikkonen to finish ahead of
him. Yeah, and of all things, that promotes keep me back up a place. And let's, now, granted, it's 15th versus 16th. There's no points. But no, this is just when I read this, I was literally ready to throw my phone and say, okay, I'm done. I'm out. I'm going to go eat some barbecue and watch some fireworks go off because I don't understand it anymore. I've tried to figure it out. I mean, the only explanation that I can try to offer is that they want to come down hard on slowing down in double wave yellows. But I don't know what that means. I know it's slow down and be prepared to stop, but there's no firm rule on it's like if I slow down and the guy in front of me slows down more, I'm more likely to get a penalty because he was more conservative than me. And we're both trying to technically be safe at the same time. I mean, I get it if you fly through the zone, that's a problem, but it just doesn't make sense.
I feel like there should just be like a normal like delta to whatever a normal lap time is. Like you're going half speed through there or something like that. And here's a benchmark you have to
make. And if you're really worried about it, you have other options. You could have thrown a VSC. You could have thrown an actual safety car. I know it's the last lap and nobody wants to do that. But if you actually thought there was a danger, I mean, both cars were well off the track, well into the gravel, well off the firing line. It would have taken another massive mistake to have gotten another collision out of that. But I understand, you know, we have the Jules Bianchi thing in our memories and we have to respect that. But at the same time, either give some sort of a delta through a double wave yellow zone or throw a VSC out and just end it right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a mess, to be honest. I mean, Michael Massey, the race director, not to be too boring on this, wants the penalty system to kind of reflect driver safety standards that you would see out on the road in real life. And what I find baffling about that, as Deanna pointed out, you've got a big crash caused by Raikkonen probably not looking where Seb was, takes him by foul, gets 2 penalty points for the incident. And then you've got Latifi and Mazepin, just because they didn't acknowledge the yellow flags, perhaps they should have done, get 3 penalty points, which is extremely harsh because you do that 3 more times, that's a race ban. And I remember earlier this weekend, obviously Lance Stroll and Kimi Raikkonen got penalised in practice and qualifying respectively for speeding in a pit lane. And I think the most was Kimi on Friday got a $900 fine, which is like pocket change to those guys and no penalty points. And you'd think, well, he's speeding. If you did that on the road or you're 10 kilometers an hour fast on the road, you'd get pulled over and get points on your license. So there's no consistency in that. And the fact that the teams are now trying to lobby for this, and Michael Massey's defense was, well, you know, you guys had your chance and we're not going to change that. That's not really good enough because the FIA and the stewards have been very quick to try and issue out alternatives with technical directives based on this season for a culmination of reasons. And yet they're not willing to look at the safety standards and also, more importantly, a fairer penalty system because it's ridiculous. And I think we'll get into that a bit more with Lando Norris a bit later on, how stupid this system has become with the super license points.
Yeah, agreed. And the biggest thing, like you said, is the consistency in pretty much any sport. fans always get upset about the consistency aspect. Like, the rule's the rule. If we just followed it consistently, it'd be a lot easier to accept a lot of these. But when different rulings come out with the same kind of rule, same sort of situations, that's when we as fans get frustrated. But to wrap up the back markers, we just have Lance Stroll. Probably not the best decision to start his race on softs, kind of ruin it from the start. Dropped from 9th to 13th. Terrible, terrible day for Aston Martin. No points for either driver. So we'll move on to our first.
He also got a penalty for pit lane speeding. I don't think they ever mentioned that, but he got a penalty, too. No penalty points. Like, you're just saying, no penalty points for pit lane speeding for Stroll.
How do you speed? I don't know why I wouldn't have gotten penalty points, limit. Though.
Wow. If anybody can do it, old man can do it.
That's true. I feel like they try to, like, carry speed in and then, like, lock up. He probably just left a little too late. Like, you know.
It has to be, yeah.
That could be.
Yeah.
It's got to be at the start, yeah. All right, so we're going to take our first break and come back and talk about the midfield.
Support for the Outlap F1 podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, everyone. Manscaped has just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and all the time. Manscaped has been trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so join the movement now for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. We already know that Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. The same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to your collection. It's light, approachable, and gentlemanly-like in all the right ways. Think of it as your roommate for the night in the town to keep you fresh and ready for anything. It's calming and inviting. This signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in for an incredible woodsy and masculine finish. This 50 milliliter spray cologne is even hypoallergenic, cruelty-free, dye-free, paraben-free, and 100% vegan. It even comes in a beautifully designed glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent sets the mood for any occasion. I've been personally using this product for about a month though, and let me tell you, it smells incredible, and my significant other has certainly been enjoying it as well. Right now, our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast can get 20% off plus free shipping by using the code OUTLAP, that's OUTLAP, one word, at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com.
All right, welcome back to Season 3, Episode 27 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. We are talking the Austrian Race Review, the second Austrian Race Review. I am James, along with John. I'm sorry, without John. I'm with Andy and Deanna and special guest Adam from DNF1 Podcast. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, and Reddit at Outlap F1 Podcast. And we are about to talk about the midfield. Deanna, let's start off with your boy Yuki Tsunoda. What do you think about his? I'm assuming he has penalties. Everybody does, right?
Yes, he does, and he has probably two that he should not have. Kind of inexcusable, 2 5-second penalties for crossing the white line of the pit entry. This is a track he's been before in F2 and F3, I think. So he knows the track, he knows where those lines are. You've been there all weekend, 2 weekends in a row. I don't know how you do that and do that twice in one race. But anyway, other than that,
and even I think last year they moved that line specifically for that. Like, they moved it and they put it in an angle to make it easier for cars to get in and be within the rules. And you know, we want to complain all of the weird penalties. These unfortunately are completely legit and were deserved.
But I think he does get 2 penalty points. It was 1 penalty point for each offense. And again, Stroll didn't get a penalty point for speeding in the pit lanes. I think that one's more egregious. But anyway, okay, continuing on. Yeah, he had a 2-stop strategy. And that was about probably, with the penalties, the best he could ask for. In 12th, he did have a really good quality, though. His best in P7 of his career so far. So at least making strides there. But just saw a couple pretty simple mistakes that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, that AlphaTauri definitely is very, very quick over 1 lap in qualifying. Adam, you want to take George Russell's day? What'd you think?
My heart breaks for George. It really does. I mean, I was literally praying to every single god that you could muster and believe in to try and get him a championship point. And, you know, I'm a big fan of George. And when Fernando Alonso was sort of creeping up behind him towards the end of the race, I was like, don't do this, Fernando. Please, just let George have his day. I don't care if you have to fake it. Just convince us that, that Alpine is not quick enough. And the funny thing is that George, despite a, you know, a lackluster start, we kind of got bogged down when, you know, everyone's sort of, you know, jostling for position. You couldn't get caught up in clusters where you're just going to go backwards. And that's what happened to George. And he just recovered his race really well. I mean, as Deanna pointed out, you know, the AlphaTauri starting on the soft tyres, which I thought was a, you know, it was a, not really going to work out for them. The same with the Aston Martin. So as the race was progressing in its early stages, I'm thinking, right, you can, Gasly will probably get George at some point anyway, because Gasly is amazingly quick. Yuki, obviously the two penalties he got made it easier, but the Aston Martins, I'm thinking, right, those two are going to drop back. So that gives George his chance at 10th place. And then I see Fernando creeping up and I'm like, please don't do this. But Crawley, you know, we're going to get into the other incidents about what's the where the line of hard racing. But I thought those two, when they were battling, was absolutely spot on how you should race as hard as possible, but obviously giving each other enough room. And, you know, I would love to give George a championship point for his efforts, but I think he'll take solace in this. And hopefully this will inspire him to maybe not get a point for Williams this season if the opportunity does come, great, but, you know, to propel him on to that next step, whatever that may be. But yeah, such a great effort. But once again, not quite good enough, unfortunately, for George.
And
he
did
say before the race. I was going to say before the race, he had that issue with the rear. And I watched the onboard from the start. So he got passed pretty easily by, like, I think it was Stroll, Leclerc, Vettel, and Ricciardo. And then after that, came on the radio and said he was still having issues with the rear and the rear brakes. So I think maybe had he not had that issue, whatever it was, kind of at the beginning, I hope this might be a different story. But unfortunately, here we are.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And part of me, when I first heard that radio, I was like, oh, for goodness sake, like, again, seriously, because he had the pneumatic valve issue of the last race. And, but for me, I kind of, when I heard that team radio, after I kind of relaxed a bit and they said, oh, actually, we're not finding anything wrong, I'm thinking, is George, is it a bit like anxiety sometimes? We have a bit of a panic attack about something, or he's perhaps being oversensitive to what he's feeling in the car. And he's thinking, oh, is this right? Is this right? Hoping that nothing goes wrong, because this could be his big chance at a championship point. But as you pointed out, he probably was suffering issues with the rear brakes in particular, because he did get caught out at the start. But no, it's a fair point.
Andy?
Yeah, I mean, this was the case of a race where, you know, he tried. The only analogy I can kind of think of is, you know, like on a golf course, you're trying to clear the water and you're going to, you know, try to yank the ball a little bit extra, and you give it everything you have and you think you've got it and you still don't manage to do it, and the ball just goes kerplunk into the water. That kind of describes Russell's race, because he gave it everything that he could. Outstanding qualifying effort, and just could not close the show at the end. But his time is definitely going to come. I mean, you're seeing more and more, and what you're looking for in with guys in teams who kind of struggle at the back, flash points. Compare what you see with Russell with what you don't see in, like, Giovinazzi. When's the last time we ever said Antonio Giovinazzi flashed for you? We're talking about George Russell flashing all the time. Almost every Saturday, he's putting that car where it doesn't belong. Today, it almost came to fruition for him on Sunday. But yeah, his time is going to come on the rise. For a guy who's got no points other than the one time in Sakhir, his stock is soaring. So good on him.
Very true. So moving up to 10th place, we got Fernando Alonso scoring a point after starting in 14th. Fernando gets more and more comfortable in this car as the season goes on. He looked really fast in Q1, finishing up in P3, I believe, in Q1. But then, of course, we talked about Vettel causing him to kind of to ruin his last flyer lap, leaving him in 14th. But, of course, he did break the hearts of many F1 fans across the Twitter sphere by passing George Russell for that that last point in the race. So then we can move up to Pierre Gasly. Deanna, what do you got on his day?
The only one to make the two-stop strategy work. And he's looking pretty quick towards the end. He finished within a second of Leclerc as well. But basically, I think that was just about the best he could salvage on the strategy he was on. And yeah, another solid qualifying for him, and a solid weekend all around.
Very good. Speaking of Charles Leclerc, he finished in 8th place, got himself 4 points on the day after starting in 12th. He did make it through lap one. He had some really, really good fights with Sergio Perez. I think Perez, his car had to have been a little bit compromised after his tangle there with Lando Norris that we'll talk about a little bit later. Because he didn't quite seem to have the pace like Max did. Not that he would, even if the car was 100%. Max just has that little bit of edge on him. But some great battles, Charles Leclerc. I guess I was glad that Sergio got those penalties because it kind of benefited Sainz, but I'm not totally sure he was completely deserving of both of them. It just looked like good, hard racing to me. Stuff I love to see from Charles Leclerc. I think I tweeted or texted you guys that in the group chat, that he was losing out on it, but I was glad to see him having that drive, having that tenacity there to go after those moves. Charles does seem to do that for fairly often. Sometimes I do worry about him, as I've mentioned in episodes before, where I see a little bit of Bottas in him and it scares me a little bit. But then races like this happen, and I'm like, nah, he ain't no Bottas. So that was good. I'll take the 4 points on the day. If he would have gotten Perez, I think he could have finished in sixth. But then I think having a swap with Sainz, that was the right call. Sainz was able to get around the next couple of guys. So overall, not totally thrilled with his day, but I'll take the points and I'll take the eighth place for him. Anybody else got anything on Charles Leclerc?
Yeah, I mean, he's as much as we wanted to criticize him last week for the move that, you know, ended Gasly's race, and we're saying that he didn't judge the space very well. He did that a lot much better today. And now he generally just is, the more I'm seeing of him, he likes to dance on that razor's edge of, you know, is he maybe being too aggressive or is it genuine awesome moves? This weekend, genuine awesome moves. Great racing with Perez. It was nice to see him get his elbows out properly. So I thought he had himself actually a very good day, especially considering from where he was coming back from qualifying.
Adam, I know you're a Ferrari guy. Are you more Sainz or Leclerc?
Well, I think Deanna wants to say something, so I'm happy to let her go first.
I'm trying to avoid, if you want to jump in.
He might know where I'm going with this.
I mean,
do we want to talk about the lap one dive onto Vettel that looked very, very similar to what happened last year? Did you see that?
It did.
Was that McLaren turn three not working out well again?
Mm-hmm. It seemed to work out better this time. At least Vettel learned his lesson.
What's that, break later into turn three, so avoid the Leclerc. I could see the flashbacks going now.
Go ahead, Adam.
But but James, yeah, in answer to your question, I mean, I'm a big Charles Leclerc fan, and there's always that balance I think he still needs to find between being perhaps a little bit overzealous with his overtaking. I think we saw last week, we saw a kind of a combination of the brilliance and also the clumsy of Leclerc. Obviously, as you mentioned already, getting, you know, being a bit clumsy with his spatial awareness and obviously playing his part in ruining Gasly's race. But obviously, you know, the week afterwards, you know, it was a good drive. I was a bit surprised, though, that Ferrari didn't put him on the harder tyres to start with, that they did with Sainz. I thought that was a better strategy, especially given that Pirelli went with a softer compound this week than they did last week at the Styrian race. I thought Ferrari, naturally, both outside the top 10, they looked like they'd set their cars up for the race, you know, to handle the tyre degradation issues. Obviously, they experienced at France, and as I hoped for, they moved their way up the field. But as we saw, it just, Leclerc, for whatever reason, just couldn't get past Ricciardo. And I think if they'd have started him on the harder tyre like they did Sainz to go a bit longer in the opening stint, then perhaps he may have gotten him on fresher mediums towards the end like Sainz did. I was happy Ferrari did do that switch around. That did surprise me a bit because I thought they might just try and leave Leclerc out there, but it worked with Sainz. And on Carlos Sainz, he's been absolutely fantastic this season. I was kind of hoping that Ferrari last year, when they announced Sainz was going to drive for them to replace Vettel, I was kind of hoping Ricciardo was going to join Ferrari. I was a big fan of his, but Carlos Sainz has taken to this car like a duck to water, and it's not the easiest car to drive. And I think of all of the guys that have jumped into new seats this season, Carlos Sainz has been without doubt the best at accumulating to his new machinery. And I think, as I mentioned about Lando Norris, we have to consider this guy in the equation in the next gen. I mean, he was arguably Max Verstappen's most competitive teammate when you take all things into account, albeit in their first season at Toro Rosso. And I'm looking forward to seeing what more Carlos Sainz can do. He's doing a fantastic job, and hopefully at the minimum, he keeps pushing Leclerc because he's doing a great job.
Yeah, they're
so
neck
far.
And neck now in the Drivers' Championship. I think it's 62 for Leclerc and like 60 for Sainz. So that'll be a battle worth watching. I like that Ferrari made that call to put Sainz in front of him, because I really do want them to stay close to McLaren for that battle for third. and the constructors. But ultimately, I just want each of them gaining the experience, because when Ferrari nails these 2022 regs, they'll be ready to finish 1-2 pretty much all season, I'm sure.
I certainly hope so. Bring back the old glory days.
Deanna started nodding there for a second, so I'm going to go with that.
not the way you want me to.
Of course, she'll be editing the video, so I'm sure she'll take that part out, but it's all good. I saw it. All right, so Adam brought up Carlos Sainz. Anything on Sainz's day, Andy, before we go to Ricardo?
I mean, honestly, just a superb drive. The fact that he was able to get those tires to go, granted, they were the harder tires, but as Adam rightly points out, these were the mediums last week. So mm-hmm. the fact that he was able to go that far, I think he went 10 laps longer on the tire this weekend than he did in the previous weekend, is absolutely a testament to being at one with the car, knowing what the car can do, knowing what the car can't do, and then not doing it. And when he got out on the racer strategy, yeah, I mean, I did not think he was going to be able to be, or Ricardo was going to hold him back, because he clearly had the tire advantage. And it was because of that strategy that he was able to get it. So fair play for him. You know, I see you, Ferrari. You're not going away. I know that. I was a McLaren fan. So great drive from Sainz today.
Good deal. So you want to go right into Daniel Ricciardo then, that finish in seventh, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, we can go right into to Danny Rick. You know, this was probably what the plan was last weekend. You know, if he didn't have the engine blip, you know, granted, still struggling in qualifying. Yes, it's still sector two. That was where it really just didn't come together for him again. But had a really good start. Had some good overtakes, showed good pace that he didn't get a chance to do last time. But he still has to work on that quality pace. I mean, that's kind of really what's going to hold him back. But it was nice to see him re-engaged. Nice to see him smiling again. That was good. So, you know, now he gets to go to Silverstone, a track he knows very, very well. And we'll see if the progress can continue. And let's hope it does.
What do you think, Deanne? Is that going to continue for him?
I hope so, but I think I've already said that a few times this season. But I'm just, it's getting better. It's getting better other than quality. I think the race pace, it's good to see him do some more like attacking and overtaking and all that sort of thing. And just like seem like the normal Ricardo we know in race trim, at least. But yeah, I hope it gets better. But we will see.
Very good. All right, so now we move into fifth place with Checo Perez. He obviously started in third place, finishing in fifth. Deanna, you want to break down Checo's day?
Yeah, so probably the most eventful day of anybody. So first off, he qualified in third and then was trying to make the move on the round the outside of Lando Norris. Was pushed out wide and Lando was given a penalty as a result. But because he went out wide into the gravel, he dropped all the way down to, I believe it was 10th. Kind of worked his way back up, had that long battle with Leclerc, pushed him out wide twice, receiving penalties for those. We can talk about kind of whether or not all of those should be penalties in a minute here. But eventually kind of pulled away from Claire, got past Ricardo, and then Sainz was able to, on those kind of fresher tires at the end, get close enough to him where the 10-second penalty, it slotted him behind Ricardo and ahead, or behind Sainz and ahead of Ricardo. So very, very eventful day. I don't know. Do we want to go through those penalties one by one?
Let's do it.
Yes. Okay.
Sure, why not?
Okay. So starting with the Norris versus Perez incident, I'm going to let Andy start this one.
So, all right. So we're going into turn. Just we're going into treacherous turn four, which apparently is this corner that no one apparently can get right anymore. Norris is on the inside. Perez, this is the first lap after the safety car. So that's actually kind of important. So it is kind of almost like a de facto. There's no DRS. De facto kind of lap one reset here. Perez is trying to go around the outside. He is parallel, if not maybe a little bit in front when they get to the corner. Norris clearly on the inside. He is moving across to the outside. Perez basically runs out of room. I don't think at any point he was any more than a smidge in front. The move was clearly not done by the time they got to the corner, and runs onto the green stuff, runs into the gravel. Very, very similar but different to the move that, and everyone wants to reference Albon Hamilton from the previous year that got the penalty. Albon in that situation is 75% to 90% past Lewis, and Lewis hits him with the front wing and spins Albon out. So to me, it's a very, very different type of incident. I don't think it's worth a penalty. I think that's just good, hard racing. I think if I'm going to go to anybody who's the authority on this, when they pull Christian Horner, of all people, onto the broadcast, and he says, well, Checo went out there. What else do you expect is going to happen? And then that happens. I don't know. I understand maybe even taking a look at it just to see. But when the investigation graphics went away, I'm like, okay, here's the no further action is necessary graphic. And then the 5-second penalty comes up. What are we teaching? How are we supposed to defend? What is Lando supposed to do? If you want to see a great recap of it, Karun Shandok on Sky Sports, it's probably on their YouTube or Facebook channel, does a great side-by-side breakdown of that entire incident. And he's basically telling that what the stewards wanted Lando to do was to go so far to the inside that he would have had no choice but to give up that position. Now, last time I thought it was a race and you're supposed to, you know, fight it out until it's kind of done. If I get a smidge in front and that's just move done, that can't be right. It can't be right.
I just also want to point out, so I was going back and watching the onboard in lap on, or not on the safety car restart in turn one, Lando pushed him out wide and he went off into over the curb, kind of into the runoff. I think if there is not gravel in that corner, there is not a penalty. Then you're looking at something like Hamilton and Verstappen and Bahrain saying Verstappen gains a lasting advantage. Like the only reason there's a penalty there is because he went into the gravel and that kind of like dropped him back. It's not standard really over different circuits or even different corners on the same exact track, which I think just makes it all the more confusing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. It's funny enough because I was actually going to weigh in with a similar reason, and they took them 16 laps to sort of decide whether or not it was a penalty or not. And I suppose you can look at it as many times as you want, and I don't think you're ever going to be 100% happy with the decision. The only reason, as Deanna already pointed out, why I thought perhaps you could give a penalty for that is because there's gravel on the outside of turn four. And as we know, the cars understeer onto the outside. And whilst I accept what is Lando supposed to do in that situation where he's trying to keep the position, they were sort of swapping positions under braking. So it's almost like, well, they're both trying to go for it. And perhaps because there's gravel on the outside, unfortunately for Lando, because he's not able to give Checo any space around the outside for one reason or another, the FIA have just decided to give a penalty. But obviously it made it easier for them when Perez had the same issue with Leclerc and obviously went into Leclerc a little bit. I think it took him like 20 seconds.
Well, at that point, you had the precedent. I mean, that's your standard. Yeah. That was no choice. I think I came on and I said, if that's not 5 seconds, I'm out.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But, yeah, either way, the stewards are never going to come out looking good on this, because if they didn't give Lando a penalty, I'm pretty sure perhaps some Red Bull fans or other fans will say, well, hold on, you know, we can just push cars off the track now. Is that what we can do? So it was always going to be a lose-lose.
I think this was a great time to bring back the black and white flag from Leclerc's in Monza in 2019. This I think was the perfect situation to throw a black and white flag.
That's a great point. I hadn't even thought about that. That would have been
great, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, okay. Now we know where the limit is, and if you go over it again, now I'm with you.
Was it? There was a black and white flag today, though. Was that Kimi? Mm.
And they did say the FIA that after
who was the black and white flag day? Didn't Kimi get one, or was it Mazda?
Those are track limits.
Yeah.
It was both.
But they did. Yeah. But they did say they were going to start using the black and white flag more. But I'll be honest with you, I think I've only ever seen it twice. One yesterday for Mazepin. I think one for Grosjean for track limits last season. Can't remember where, but it was. It might have been No, I can't remember where it was, but I remember seeing Grosjean getting the black and white
flag
for track limits.
They black and white flags for track limits after two offenses, and then third, you get a penalty. But for actual dangerous driving, I think it's only the Leclerc that's gotten the black and white flag, and that's when they were like, oh, we're going to use it all the time, and then they just never did.
Yeah, and that would be the time to use it, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
totally even though that move in Monza was totally clean.
I think that's the missing solution to the problem.
Okay, so moving on to the other two penalties for Perez and Leclerc. So the first one, I think there was some contact on that one. And then the second one, at least to me, it seemed like he kind of lost control of the car kind of as Leclerc was passing him. After the race, Perez did say he apologized to Charles, and he had some damage to the front wing as well as older tires. So I think he just had some issues with understeer and that he didn't like to defend that way. So kind of thoughts on those two penalties?
Well, once you make the precedent that first one is a penalty, you have no choice in that case other than to make this one. But I think in aggregate, I'm looking at all three incidents, it's I hate to sound horribly American here, but it's rubbing his raisin, and that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I love that phrase, but
yeah.
No, sorry, I love that phrase, Andy, honestly, but every time I hear that, I feel, well, yeah, that's like for stock cars and NASCAR. I don't, like, not for Formula One, like, because you can't really rub each other that much. Otherwise, though, a wheel's going to, well, not a wheel fly off, obviously, with the tethers, but, you know, you're going to lose aero piece and everything else. So, as much as I love the analogy, I just don't think that works in Formula One, or at least the stewards don't see it that way.
Oh, that's totally fair. They're not agreeing with me on any of this.
No.
And yeah, I'm with Andy. Like, the fact that they gave Lando one, they had to give that to Sergio as well. And I even texted you guys, like, I don't think it's a penalty, but it's got to be at this point just because of the Lando one. So I know Sergio felt bad, but what are you going to do?
Was that the first one with Leclerc or the second one?
I just kind of wrapped them into one.
I mean, the second one, I thought, because the only reason why I thought they gave it was, as you said, Deanna, was because he sort of understeered halfway through turn six. But in a way, I kind of felt, well, Charles did sort of try to overtake him quite late into the apex. And I feel like that was one of those I thought was a little bit harsh, because I thought Leclerc could have just backed off. But it's Leclerc. He's going to go for it. And he was running the risk a little bit more. But as you said, Andy, because they set a precedence on it already, and Leclerc had that little bit moment halfway through the apex, they're like, you know what, we've got to give this a penalty. But I was a bit surprised to see them get another 5-second penalty straight afterwards.
Not consistent between different races, but consistent in one race. So I guess that's progress.
Yeah, they won't be inviting those stewards back anytime soon.
God,
Bring back Johnny Herbert.
And when he did it, he had, I think, the most incident-free race ever when they put him in there, too.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
All right, so we'll move up to fourth place now. Love to see him here, but Lewis Hamilton. Andy, why don't you tell us about his day?
So a bit of an up-and-down day, actually, for Lewis. Got to P3 off the start. Had a really nice 10-lap battle with Lando Norris there until right around lap 20 when he was able to overtake the McLaren there. He suffered damage to his floor while battling Norris, and eventually he fell back. The team gave orders to Bottas first not to overtake, and then later on the team came back on the radio and told both Mercedes drivers to flip positions, which was done. That put Hamilton back into the clutches of a hard-charging Norris, who was able to tried to replicate almost this exact same pass that Perez tried on him. But he backed out of it, did a nice switch back, was able to get him actually into turn five. Really nice move by Lando there. But for Lewis, just not the result that they wanted, but decent points. Kind of a damage limitation day. It's another day where they're not right on the heels of Red Bull. So if you look at it big picture, this was not a great day for Mercedes, certainly not for Lewis Hamilton, who are still on the back foot in this championship battle.
Anybody else?
Well, I mean, it was a tough day for Lewis. As not one that he'll remember too fondly. And obviously Total Wolf said he had the damage to the floor, which cost him half a second a lap, or so he says. I don't think it was that much, but it would have been interesting to see what Lewis could have done with a fully working car. I think the most interesting moment of the race, obviously, was when he was having those issues, and you had James on the radio saying to Valtteri Bottas, "You're free to race Lewis." And I'm like, hold on, I'm going to have to record this audio. I don't know when I'm going to hear that again. But obviously I was hoping for a battle between them two, but obviously Lewis playing the team game, getting out of the way for Bottas, and obviously eventually Lando as well. So, it's a shame for Lewis. He seems to be doing everything possible that he can to try and close this gap to Max Verstappen, but he just doesn't seem to have the machinery at the moment to do it.
Yeah, it's like weird looking at the standings now too, because it feels like, especially with the run that Max and Red Bull are on right now, it feels like the Drivers' Championship's getting out of hand. When you look at it, it's really not. Just one bad race by Max, one mistake, one DNF, and Lewis could be right back in this thing. So that's definitely something we got to remember as we think about this. But it's weird seeing Lewis in second. It's weird seeing Mercedes in this position and making these sorts of mistakes. But we're just one race away from this, the whole thing changing. So that's what's going to continue to make it exciting throughout the year. I hope it stays within this range. I want Max to win the championship, but just having this battle at the top continue race after race is really exciting and really good for F1.
Yeah. I don't think the doubleheader at Austria is doing them any favors, Mercedes.
No.
I think they've just been so comprehensively beat and they're just kind of beat down now at this point.
Yeah.
And it looks much worse than that might actually be. We'll see when we get to Silverstone. But I think this was very clearly kind of a Red Bull track for this season. So, and to do two of those in a row probably wasn't the greatest.
It wasn't good medicine to re-rack and go again at the same track where you're compromised.
Yeah.
I do think Mercedes should show a lot better at Silverstone. It's all high speed corners. It's where they test. You know, it's where they do all their shakedowns and stuff. So if they can't get it there, that's when I think you start to do the countdown of, okay, when do we really call this championship over? If they can't show well at Silverstone, you got to start putting the clock on it, because I don't see where else they're going to come back from.
Yeah, I mean, if at this point, if Red Bull doesn't win the Constructors' Championship, it's either a historic collapse a la like the 1969 Chicago Cubs, or just the most epic comeback by Mercedes ever. And probably I would consider it their most impressive Constructors' Championship in this run, just to come back. But the driver's one's really where it's still at, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break here and then come back and talk podium and awards. All right, welcome back once again, Outlap F1 Podcast, with special guest Adam from DNF1 Podcast. Make sure you go check it out. And now we are talking podium. And for that, I send it to Andy first. Tell us about your boy, Lando.
Probably one of the most impressive weekends I've seen from McLaren and a driver in a very long time. Started second, finished third, 15 points for him. This is now 14 races in a row with scoring points. He is still the only driver to score points in every race this season. Unlike last week, where they chose not to fight the top four, the pace was there and he was allowed to fight a lot more. We talked about the incident with Perez at turn four. It was eventually assessed the penalty. Two penalty points, total of 10, which sounds really bad, but two roll off next week. So he will be on 8 where he was going into this race for Silverstone. Took the penalty on the pit stop, dropped to 4th, but found pace against both Mercedes cars when Hamilton had the problem, and eventually he was able to repass Hamilton late. Closing in on Bottas and making it looked very interesting for possible P2, ultimately did not have the pace to make that move. He was voted driver of the day by the fans. There was a very rather unfortunate graphic when they showed driver of the day as apparently he's been signed by Mercedes, according to the F1 graphics department. So Bottas' seat gets even a little more hotter, apparently, than it already was. I'm just a great from being really nowhere in practice to showing up. Like I said, it was a shock qualifying that he put out on P2 to then show that he wasn't just going to drop back and he was going to fight with the Mercs for P3 and P2 today. And did, I thought, everything that he needed to do. Probably did deserve P2 on merit, but penalty is what it is. So I don't want to go back through the penalty anymore. But great drive from Lando today. Very, very pleased as a fan. This is a driver making the next step. You're seeing now the next step.
Deanna?
Oh, just hugely impressive overall. I think really to keep Hamilton behind for those first 20 laps was really just fun to watch. I didn't think for a second that he was going to keep him behind for that long. So that was a lot of fun. And I mean, we'll talk about Bottas in a second. Overall, it looks like things went well for him this weekend, but I think Norris without that 5-second penalty, if Bottas legitimately finishes behind a McLaren, that starts looking less good for him for next year. But yeah, I never say anything good about Bottas, so I'll stop now.
Adam, anything on Lando?
I mean, a fantastic drive. And, you know, very unlucky, obviously, not to get P2 owing to that time penalty. It would have been great to see if he managed to get up there with ahead of the two Mercedes drivers. But, you know, it's funny because obviously all this talk about the Mercedes seat with George Russell and Valtteri Bottas, but I wonder if Lando was a bit too premature, perhaps, to sign that long-term deal with McLaren that was announced at Monaco. It seems that, you know, obviously he wants to secure his future. You had the likes of Magnussen, Stoffel, Van Dorn that were unsuccessful before him after two seasons. But, you know, Lando has proven that he's certainly reaching that level above those guys. And perhaps, you know, the back part of his mind, whilst I doubt he actually will be, there could be a part of him that's thinking, damn, if I wasted a little bit, perhaps Mercedes might have come knocking my way, or maybe Red Bull in the future or something like that. But now he signed that long-term deal. We'll have to see how it goes. For all we know, McLaren could produce a fantastic car and Lando could be competing for a world championship next season. So it's just another impressive performance from Lando, just reminding everyone how good he's been this season.
Yeah, my mind started to wander when they showed that graphic with him on Mercedes. And I was like, damn, what if he had been the one to go to Mercedes and then George slid in there and McLaren? Like, how different would that look? But like you said, the way McLaren's working as a team, like, I've got a lot of confidence in them nailing this 2022 regs, and it being the good decision for Lando. It's just whether or not it ends up being a good decision, for Danny Ric. Maybe George does go to McLaren and takes Danny Ric's spot.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting next year to see where all the cars shake out, and if it's really still Mercedes at the top, or maybe it's McLaren or Red Bull, and then kind of
or Ferrari?
No. see how it shakes out from there. Not giving you that one.
We shall see. All right, so we can get into second place. The ass man, Valtteri Bottas himself, starting in fifth, finishing in second, moving up three grid places, which doesn't happen very often for Valtteri Bottas, so good day for him there, 18 points. Definitely the benefactor of both the Hamilton damage and the Norris penalty there. So was it all on merit? I'd say no. Adam, what do you think about Valtteri Bottas?
It's been a tough season for Valtteri. He's had some good days and he's had some very difficult days where he's been completely nowhere. The last couple of races, though, you know, France and the two races here at Austria, they've not been too bad for Valtteri. I think he's done the absolute most he possibly could. And, you know, I think he's doing the best he can to try and argue the case to stay with the team. I suppose what goes for him is, I think Lewis would prefer for Valtteri to be his teammate next season. Not that I think Lewis has a say in it now, but, you know, and there's that stability being together for 5 years and being so successful that Mercedes know what they have in someone like Valtteri Bottas. I suppose, unfortunately for Valtteri, I think there's the only way he could possibly keep his seat right now is if he starts to try and get onto Lewis's level and really be more of a forward in Max's side and try and help Lewis win the championship. I just don't think that's possible for him. So, hopefully his future will be clarified soon. I mean, he's more than good enough to be in Formula One, but there just seems to be a limited number of seats. And I think that is weighing on the back of his mind. Like, if I don't have this Mercedes seat, where do I go next season? So hopefully something gets sorted out soon, but I think Mercedes probably do need to clarify Valtteri's position for next season if they're going to try and win the Constructors' Championship more than anything else.
Yeah, I think for Bottas...
Is anybody here concerned? Or go ahead.
Oh, all I was going to say is I just think the last couple races... I don't know. I think Bottas just needs to clearly beat Perez over the next kind of few races as they're making that decision. I just think, especially like now that they're kind of dropping through the field, but he just doesn't really overtake anyone. And that's not going to work well if they're really trying to put up an actual fight to Red Bull. So I just don't see the long term there. I do think he's a good driver. He should at least be at Williams next year, because the absolute wealth of knowledge I'm sure he has after being at Mercedes for that many years, and he's an excellent qualifier. I just don't think, kind of in race craft, I think Russell will end up being better. And yeah, that's what I'm pushing for.
So, you know, this for Valtteri, we talked about it many times when I've said, you know, he's a guy who gets a lot of good counting stats. This was a counting stat race. I mean, you look at it on the surface, it's P2. That's really good. You know, it's 18 points. It's all that. But what did he do to really earn it? You know, Lando got a penalty and his teammate broke. And congratulations, now you're P2. So did you really do anything? And the only reason he didn't have to deal with Perez is because Perez got, you know, went to the gravel and dropped to ninth. So yeah, I don't know what he does. Adam, I think you mentioned it very well. The only way that he's ever going to get onto Lewis's level is if he wants to send it sometime, anytime, still waiting, not seeing it. So I think he's in the exact same position he was when the weekend started. Seat very hot under him. And he, I don't know that he did anything that makes it any better.
Yeah, it's a good point. And on the Williams front, actually, that Deanna pointed out, that naturally would be the place where I'd expect him to go. My only concern for that, though, is given Williams's current situation financially, obviously with Dalton Capital, they've obviously got a new team principal come in. They obviously want to take it in a certain direction, but it's more, can they financially support someone like Valtteri Bottas's salary? I mean, the knowledge and know-how that he brings to the team would be invaluable. I'm wondering, though, if that seat may be at threat, if, for example, in F2, someone like Dan Ticktum ends up going on a bit of a roll and perhaps challenge for the F2 title, because obviously he, I'd imagine, will be first in line, him and Jack Aitken to a degree. And Williams may feel that they can't support Bottas's salary or invest financially in a car that Bottas would want to drive. So I'm sort of wondering what seats might be available for him, because at the moment, it doesn't seem to be many, if any at all.
I think the other one would maybe be Kimi's seat. At Alpha.
Yeah, I don't see him wanting to change power units.
Yeah.
But if it's a seat,
well, no, you're right. But I thought he gave an interview this weekend where he said, no matter where I'm going to be, I'm going to be on Mercedes power. So, I mean, that I think just eliminates everything, maybe, but Williams.
I wonder, because George said a similar thing where he was like, next year I'll be in Mercedes power. I wonder if they know that both of them, one's going to be in the Mercedes, one's going to be in the Williams seat, but they just haven't figured out which one.
That could be.
And they're just waiting for the British Grand Prix to tell us.
Well, that's the hot rumor.
Well, that's the rumor, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I think Bottas to Williams makes the most sense if Williams really wants to take another step. And it seems like they're getting better as a team. It seems like Darlington Group is actually putting money into it. Obviously, Bottas would be a pretty hefty salary, but I mean, does he take a salary cut to stay in F1? I mean, and be a part of
new
a team?
New regs, they could go back to the front. You don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, he feels like he could help him do that and take a little bit less money. You know, that could be a possibility for sure.
I mean, if he could do that and prove that he still has some worth to a team, there's nothing to say that he couldn't get back to a top drive somewhere in the future if he was able to do that. I still think there's a lot good about him other than he just is, in my opinion, too conservative for what he's being asked to do.
Yeah, that's for sure. One of my concerns when they announced that Lewis deal and they wrapped it up so early compared to his last one, I was like, man, I wonder if Lewis was like, hey, if you guys let me keep Bottas as my teammate, I'll sign right now. Like, keep George out of the seat. That's just like the conspiracy part of my brain working. But that was definitely a concern I had going into that. But at this point, we've talked way too much about Valtteri Bottas. So, Dino, you're welcome, buddy. And we said mostly nice things, I feel like. So that was kind of weird. I feel kind of gross, but it's fine. So
we can balance it out. We can balance it out if you want. I've got some great ones.
All right. So we'll go to Max Verstappen in first place. Allegedly, he was so far up, I don't even know where he finished or when he finished. Didn't see it much on the TV besides a really risky, in my opinion, pit pit stop there towards the end. Did not see that coming. Obviously, I have more faith in the Red Bull pit crew than any pit crew in any form of racing anywhere. But still, that was a roll of the dice there. Deanna, what did you think about Max Verstappen's day overall?
I think even on that pit stop, unless it was like a Bottas and Monaco level pit stop, he would have been fine. Still, with that late pit stop, he finished 18 seconds up the road. Yeah. It would have been closer to 43 yeah. Had he not pitted. But just absolutely just destroyed everyone throughout the entire weekend. Did manage to hold on to pole, even though that wasn't his greatest lap. He didn't improve on the second run. But yeah, just his first ever Grand Slam led every lap, fastest lap, and pole position, I believe, is all of it. But yeah, he did what he needed to.
He took that record from Vettel on Vettel's birthday weekend, so I appreciated that for youngest ever to do that.
Yeah, I mean, once he got to, I think it was turn, once he got to turn four and Norris wasn't on his gearbox, that was the end of, like, the racing for Max. I mean, it was just a question of, he just, you know, and even once Lewis got past Lando, you know, Lewis wasn't coming back at him enough or nearly to the point where you know, there was ever going to be any really real battle. The only thing that I was selfishly thinking of, you know, maybe with that pit stop, maybe something weird happens. But Deanna, as you said, it would have had to have been a 43-second pit stop. So I think they played it safe. They had the pit stop in hand. And, you know, when you can do it, that's what you do.
Definitely. Adam, anything on Max Verstappen?
Well, I mean, what more can be said? I mean, the guy is driving like a freaking cheat code at the moment. It's unbelievable. Maybe one rule they should incorporate if Max is that far ahead is he gets out and changes his own tyres. I mean, the FIA want to slow down Red Bull pit stops. Maybe that's the way to go. The drivers have to do all the legwork themselves. It'd be like having Guido alongside. Maybe that's even too fast. But yeah, that'd be quite funny to see. Just stand at the end, blow his wheel gun and go pit stop. But or whatever the Dutch equivalent for it is. But yeah, I mean, the atmosphere was incredible in Austria for Max Verstappen, although Lando reckons they were his fans. I'm inclined to agree with Lando. They're all wearing orange. It still counts. But I mean, if that's what we're going to see in Austria, imagine how great it's going to be in Zandvoort. That is going to be unbelievable to see what happens, especially if Max wins.
My only concern with Zandvoort is going to be they're going to be popping so much of that orange smoke, we may not even be able to see the track. All right, yeah. Andy, you want to recap the driver standings and the team standings this week? John kind of left you out to dry here.
Sure. So, recapping the top 10 in the drivers. In first place, the aforementioned Max Verstappen. He is on 182 points. In second is Lewis Hamilton with 150. Third is Sergio Perez with 104. Fourth is Lando Norris with 101. Fifth is Valtteri Bottas with 92. Sixth, Charles Leclerc with 62. Seventh, Carlos Sainz with 60. Eighth, Daniel Ricciardo checks in at 40 points. Ninth is Pierre Gasly on 39 points. And in 10th place is Sebastian Vettel with 30. As for the teams, the updated standings are as follows. In first place, Red Bull Racing, 286 points. In second, Mercedes with 242. Third is McLaren on 141. Fourth is Ferrari on 122. Fifth is AlphaTauri with 48. Sixth is Aston Martin with 44. Seventh, Alpine with 32. Eighth, Alfa Romeo with 2. Ninth is Williams. And 10th, still bringing up the rear, is Haas F1.
Very good. Thank you, Andy. So now we will move into the fan email section. And for that, I'll hand it off to Deanna. With this first one, looks pretty long, so good luck.
Oh, at least John didn't type it, so maybe I'll be able to read it this time. Okay, so first, Joshua Kerr says, distract Andy for a bit because I'm talking penalties. There needs to be a proper look at penalties for so-called forcing a driver off the track. In my opinion, the precedent seems to have been set with Hamilton's five-second penalty when Albon went off into the gravel last year's Austrian Grand Prix. However, what did we expect Norris and Perez to do? Not defend the position? Not take the racing line as normal? Why should we penalize hard racing? If you're going to go for a move around the outside, you've got to be prepared, like Alonso did against Russell, to yield and go again next time. Don't expect to squeeze through a small gap either, like Leclerc had at turn six against Perez, with the Mexican simply taking the racing line. For sure, Perez and Leclerc were hampered, but you can't penalize hard racing and drivers trying to defend positions. Happy Independence Day to our favorite American F1 podcasters. Thank you very much for that. Would anybody like to say anything else at all about penalties?
Josh, I am with you on all of these points. You know, we sometimes go off on a Twitter branch off the, him and I, but we are on the same page when it comes to this. So I can't agree with him more.
I'm with you too, Josh.
All right. Next up, Rachel Fleming says, is Kimi's time in F1 coming to a natural end? He really hasn't done nothing that great so far. And at the end of the race with Vettel, that was another very poor incident. And it looked like Kimi's fault again. And it was deemed to be Kimi's fault shortly after he berated his engineer about telling him about track limits. So any, what do we think? The end for Kimi?
I think it was a stroke of genius by Kimi. It got him up another place on the finishing order. So good job, Kimi. A pure veteran move, right?
Well, you almost wonder how much longer he wants to keep doing it. Obviously, he's still having fun. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like ability, I think you're seeing slowly a decline, which kind of sucks for a guy who's done it for as long as he has. I want to remember Kimi winning at COTA in 2018, not Kimi crashing out in an Alfa Romeo at the end of his career.
All right, so next up, I don't know how. Okay, JC-LE DeJobliba.
This is the retired sports watcher. Just that's who he is.
Okay.
He has several different variations of his Twitter. I know that.
I don't know what any of that means, but he says next race is do or die for Mercedes. Show improvement or just focus straight up on 2022.
I think he's right, at least in terms of the championship. I mean, if Mercedes can't get it right at Silverstone, where else are you going to get it right? So pressure's on them. They got a few days. Maybe they can bring a couple of development parts through and hope to God that they work, because Red Bull just pulling slowly away. It's a slow death march at this point.
All right. So next up, Dave Doherty wants to know our thoughts on the penalties. I think
we've got that covered.
Not dead horse sufficiently.
Yes, I think we got that covered.
Don't do it to us, Dave.
Okay. And finally, Matt Polansky from the Red Sector MotoGP podcast says today's race is called Penalties for Everyone. Red Bull Ring is at it again, giving us turn four drama. This race had everything. 10-second penalties for Perez, 10-second penalty for Tsunoda, 5-second penalty to Norris, and stewarding. Stewarding is that thing where the stewards hand out 5-second penalties like they're free samples. Built on the back of a broken fiery rear end, Lando punched above his weight class and showed why he should be in Bottas's seat. I still think it's
Russell,
but yeah.
He's on the side of the graphics department at FOM today.
Yes.
All right. So thank you for the emails, Deanna, and thank you to everybody who sent them in. Keep them coming. Love to see it. So now we'll move into our weekly awards. And of course, we start off with our weekly rubbish award. And Andy, I'll go to you first for this.
Although this one will feel like shooting fish in a barrel, this is all on the FIA, and specifically just these stewards who, if they ever are called to do it again, somebody should get fired for making that decision, because I don't get it, who thought it was a good idea to inject themselves into the conversation way too much. We should not be having this type of conversation about referees. I hate when we have to do this. And then what are we really promoting here, and how are drivers supposed to race? We clamor and pray and want wheel to wheel. And when we get that, yeah, I know sometimes there's rough consequences and sometimes people's races get ruined, but that's the name of the game. That's racing. Let the drivers who know how to do it, do it. They know the risks. They accept them. Let them do what they do best. Just step back a little bit. Let's look big picture. Let's try to make this a fun, entertaining show. It's what it's supposed to be.
Well said, Andy. Deanna, what do you got?
I'm also going to go with the stewards, but this time it kind of probably more towards the FIA in general, but specifically penalty points and the amounts given for each different type of incident, specifically the Raikkonen getting 2 and Latifi and Mazepin getting 3. Overall on the weekend, Perez got 4, which seems a little aggressive. So that's my rubbish award.
Thank you, Deanna. Adam, what do you got for your rubbish award?
Not a criticism on his performance, but I think Sebastian Vettel's week, per se, because it started off really well. It was his birthday week, obviously celebrating being 34. Started off rubbish after his beloved Germany got beat by my beloved England at the Euros. Then ended up having penalty points and for holding up Alonso unfairly in qualifying. And then gets taken out at the end of the race by Kimi Raikkonen. And so, yeah, a pretty rubbish weekend for Seb. So, I just want to be different to everyone else.
No, I love the fact that you managed to get the Euro 2020 reference in there.
Yeah.
That's why we go across the pond.
For any of your followers that actually care. Any of your followers that actually care about football, then fair enough.
I'll care as long as you call it soccer.
I had to get that in. Oh, that's the cardinal sin where I'm from, James. I'm sorry. I mean, that's just not acceptable. I can't. That's fair blasphemy. Especially when it's
So I was leaning FIA, but you made a really good argument about Sebastian Vettel, so I'll pile on Vettel with you. However, I did see that it was his birthday weekend. I guess I never looked to see how old he was turning, and if 34 is accurate, that makes me feel weird, because I would have always thought he was older than me, but it turns out I'm a little bit older than Sebastian Vettel, which I don't know how to feel about that. So that's life, I guess.
Awesome, I suppose. I mean, at the end of the week, I just wanted to give the guy a hug. Yeah. He'd had a tough week. Yeah.
And I just, I'm done with Vettel. All right, weekly analysis paralysis. Deanna, what do you got?
I don't think there's anything too egregious. I'm just going to give it to the soft runners. And also kind of give a little shout out to Ferrari for making the very right choice to just say, if we don't make Q3, as long as we're on mediums, that's what matters. And that was absolutely the right decision.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I add in a little bit extra on Ferrari. Like Adam brought up earlier, Charles starting on the mediums, not the hards. I guess I could see the point of having a split strategy between the two, but I think the hards were the way to go. And I wish Charles would have started on those as well. Adam, what do you got for your analysis paralysis?
I mean, for me, it's got to be Bottas almost doing a 360 in the pit lane and almost taking out half the McLaren crew. For me, I think F1 social media admin for not trying to do a Tokyo Drift meme and all that, I thought was quite disappointing. I mean, I saw a lot of sliding into the DM stuff, but I thought, it's a bit tasteless, so, Depends who you ask, really. But I think we've come a long way from that sort of thing. But yeah, just a lack of creativity when a moment like that comes
very
at you.
Good. Andy?
I don't know that there was a whole lot of strategy that got really messed up other than like what Deanna said. I was thinking maybe AlphaTauri, Aston Martin, basically all the soft runners. And not all of that is necessarily their fault. It just kind of happened to them. So, you make Q3, you don't make Q3. And, maybe that's much more of a rubbish to get rid of that stupid rule for Q2. But, it is kind of what it is. So I guess I'll throw it to Aston Martin just because it just looked like from a strategy standpoint, they didn't help their drivers at all. They probably should have sent them out on mediums.
Very nice. All right. So dark horse of the day. Deanna, we'll start with you here.
I see Andy's going to do something. That I was going to go, but so I'm going to stick with the in qualifying and give it to Russell for out-qualifying the Ferraris on mediums.
Mm-hmm. Gotta
mention that
just once more. Adam, what do you got for your dark horse of the day?
I take it you're not a fan of Ferrari then, Deanna.
How can you tell?
How can you not love them? Dark horse. I mean George is a good shout, although I did say in my prediction or the preview for the Austrian Grand Prix that I thought he'd make Q3, so My dark horse, I would say, I mean, you say it enough times, you're bound to be right at least once. My dark horse, I'd probably say Danny Rick, because I think he had a difficult race last week. You know, he had power issues, which obviously bogged him down. And I think around this circuit, if you get caught in the wrong cluster of cars, you can really ruin your race, as we saw with Sergio Perez, how it affected him. But I think Danny Rick, I think there was a lot of pressure on him, and I don't think many people were expecting him to really move up the field and hold off the Ferraris and fight Perez for as long as he did. And I think overall he did a great job, which probably surprised some, but you know, hopefully that's a turn of things to come for
Very
Daniel.
Nice pick. Andy, who do you got?
I'm giving it to the brilliance of Carlos Sainz and awesome first stint, allowing him to have the great race pace late. I see you, Ferrari. I'm marking you, Ferrari. I'm not forgetting that you guys are right on our heels. And just for Carlos in general, as a dude that I've always rooted for, it's nice to see him getting some results. And as Adam rightly says, of all the guys in the new places, he's by far, far and away the most acclimated to that car.
Yep. I hate personally giving the Dark Horse Award to a prancing horse, but I got to give it to Sainz here. Great day by him. Kind of expected with his tire strategy selection there starting in 11th. But, yeah, I'm cool with Sainz for that one. All right, so we'll move on to overall driver of the day. And, Adam, you can get the first crack at this one.
Oh, it's got to be Lando. I mean, it could be easy to say Max, but he did exactly the same thing he did last week, just dominated from the front. And you can always give driver of the day to the guy that wins, but sometimes it's a bit too easy for him. But definitely Lando, fantastic drive, keeping the Mercedes behind him for as long as he did. Lewis acknowledging that, calling him a great driver. And, you know, he's been fantastic this season. So, yeah, Lando well Norris, said, without Deanna. A doubt for me.
I'm also going to go Lando Norris. Just impressive performance all around to really well and truly stay on pace with the Mercedes throughout an entire race. It's just massively impressive and not something I thought was going to happen going into this weekend.
Very good. If anybody listening doesn't know what Andy's about to say, this must be the first time you're listening.
First time you're on the podcast. Well, welcome.
Welcome in.
We're glad to have you. And I'm giving this to my boy. Yes, boys! Lando Norris for keeping his head down despite the penalties, showing great pace and producing a great and unexpected result for me for sure. I was going into this weekend and I was all kind of meh. You know, it's the third race in 3 weeks. Practices weren't all that great. And then he just totally took over Saturday for me and kept it going on Sunday. So awesome drive this weekend, Lando Norris.
And I'll go with the clean sweep for Lando. Just an awesome drive, awesome season, awesome driver. So that's it for the awards. Move into the recap of the race predictions real quick. Deanna. I mean, it's
not,
I mean,
2 points.
They're calling her the comeback kid. I don't know what's going on, but she did tie for the win this week with John. I will give you the bump. We'll call you the winner since John's not on the podcast tonight. So congratulations for the win.
Finally.
You got 3 points, one for the pole driver, one for the podium, one for fastest lap. John also got 3 points. Then me and Andy tied with 2 points apiece. We each got the pole driver and one for the podium. So overall season standings now, John leading the way still with 31, Andy with 26, myself with 21, and right nipping at my heels now, Deanna at 19. So
I also think that should be 20 because I was 2 points behind all right. last
I told week. Everybody to check my math.
Wow.
All right.
Oh, well, so I'm only checking it. It's only a point now.
Here, watch. Brilliance of technology, right? There.
Dare I say a steward's investigation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I should get an extra point because I'm gonna, a mistake, and that should put me on.
I'm going to have the stewards from this last weekend take a look and see if they agree.
Yeah. 5 second time penalty for Andy. Not getting his math
looks
right.
Like I'm, Adam, I think.
I was going to say, I'm picking the bonus picks next time because I'm the only one that hadn't done it yet. So I'm technically last.
Adam, you said you correctly predicted George Russell in Q3. So before the next race, I'm going to shoot you a DM. If you could just help me off my predictions, I'd appreciate it. I can't fall behind Deanna at this point. It would it would not be
it's
good.
It's going to happen. It's inevitable.
For me. Well, I might have to warn you, James, that I've only been right on the race winner twice this season. And given how predictable it's been, I've probably lost people a lot of money that has taken my, well, because we bet in the UK just so casually. I've been telling people not to do it, but, you know, some people have a gambling trait to them. So, you know, I can't help them with that, unfortunately. Just don't hold my advice too seriously.
I'll take it.
Well, I was doing. I was right this week, so clearly I'm back to the rut again from next week onwards. Could do. We'll try me. I'm sensing a Mazepin revolution coming. No.
You're losing me. all right, so Adam, why don't you go ahead and plug all your stuff? Where can we find you one more time?
Absolutely, thank you. So yeah, guys, obviously, for those of you that aren't familiar, my name is Adam from DNF1 Podcast. You can search DNF1 on YouTube. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, etc. You can find out all the latest news and gossip that we discuss on Formula One, including race reviews and previews throughout this season. So hopefully to see you there soon. Make sure to subscribe to the channel and let me know.
Good. Thanks for coming on, Adam. Podcast. A lot of fun with you. I'm sure we'll continue talking throughout the season. Andy, Deanna, any final thoughts from either one of you?
No, actually, now we get a break. We actually get a week off before we go to F1's birthplace, Silverstone, in the UK. And it's going to be a full crowd for that. So that's always, like, it was nice to see fans in the stands. You know, you had the first kind of dry run with Styrian Grand Prix where it was like maybe 20%. You're seeing everybody there, the Max crowd, all the orange shirts, even the smoke. That was all great to see. It's going to be an amazing atmosphere at Silverstone. My Twitter's just lit up with people super excited to go for that. So enjoy that race. Be safe. Get your vaccine if you can before, just a shameless plug, because we want things to be safe and everybody to enjoy it. So.
Yep. Also looking forward to Silverstone in the first ever sprint race, which apparently is also going to count as the poll for the weekend, which I have mixed feelings, or not mixed feelings. I don't love that, but that's a discussion for next time.
Actually, that's a good point. We're going to have to discuss how we're going to do predictions for that. But I guess, I don't know. We'll talk about it. We'll surprise everybody on the next preview episode. But yeah, we get a, was it a week off or 2 weeks off?
We get 1 week.
1 week off. Okay. Well, it'll feel like two after this triple header, so... everybody enjoy your weeks off. We will talk to you in about a week and a half here for the preview for the British Grand Prix. Once again, Adam, thank you for joining. Make sure you go give him a follow, DNF1 Podcast. And that's all we got. So Andy, take us away, sir.
As always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.